Michael Crawford has been in showbiz for over 50 years and became a household name playing the accident-prone Frank Spencer in Some Mothers Do Have 'Em that started in 1973. Since then, he's had many film and stage roles, including the original Phantom in Andrew Lloyd Webber's Phantom of the Opera. Here he reads from his autobiography, Parcel Arrived Safely, and he begins with the birth of his daughters, including some Frank Spencer-like moments.
Gabrielle and I were married after completing the shooting of Dick Lester's film, A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum. Dick was my best man, and he filmed the entire ceremony with a crank camera that made it look like Mary Pickford marries a Keystone cop. Oh well, that's the way things were done in the 60s. And when I watch it now and see what I wore for the occasion, I'm rather glad it all moves rather quickly. Oddly, I've never been able to throw out the old corduroy suit that I wore that day. I suppose I'm sentimental. And besides, I am the grandson of a second-hand clothes dealer. We didn't have time for a proper honeymoon. Television, theatre and movie projects were coming thick and fast, and Gabrielle and I just had time to move into a flat in Clapham before I started rehearsals on a new production of a hilarious black comedy called The Anniversary. The run of the play marked a very special time for Gabrielle and me. She was pregnant, and we were delightedly making arrangements for her to stay in a London nursing home in Wigmore Street when the baby arrived. I kept practicing driving the route from Clapham to Wigmore Street in our little British racing green Austin 1100. Both of us read all the baby books and had doctor spocked ourselves to death, and everything I read served to reinforce my conviction that when the baby finally came, I'd have to get Gabrielle to the nursing home in double-quick time. One Monday night, Gabrielle picked me up at the theatre as she always did, but on the drive home she complained of feeling some discomfort. We lay in bed that night. Well, in those last days of her pregnancy, I didn't exactly lie beside her. Rather, I hung off the end of the bed, because it just wasn't big enough for the three of us. I was almost asleep when I heard Gabrielle say, "Darling, I think it's coming. I think I'm going to have it." Finally convinced she was as sure as she could be that this was indeed it, I ran into the bathroom, setting what I considered to be the proper example of complete calmness. I started to shave. "What the hell am I shaving for?" I thought. "It's the middle of the night." I rushed out of the bathroom, still half covered in shaving cream and dressed in underwear and shoes. I looked like the sad remains of a Knickerbocker glory. Gabrielle tried to take command as best she could. "Michael, for heaven's sake," she pleaded, "please just calm down. Get dressed and take me to hospital." "I am calm. I'm totally calm," I argued. Then, remembering Dr. Spock, I tried to soothe her. "You must not panic." I was all sweet reason. "You're panic-stricken at the moment, and I understand that. I understand your condition, and I've trained myself to deal with you." It was as though I was talking someone down off the ledge of a very high building. She started to laugh hysterically. "Don't laugh," I said. "This is no laughing matter. Don't laugh now, because that will induce it." I was very impressed by that word. God knows I'd seen it enough in Dr. Spock. I was also aware that she could dilute at any moment. By dint of calm persuasion, Gabrielle was able to get me dressed and into the car, and we started the mad drive to the nursing home. I couldn't understand it. In just a few short hours, I had completely forgotten the way. We drove in some raging fashion, going the wrong way down one-way streets and finding every cul-de-sac in Clapham. Finally, we found London. Greatly relieved, I pulled up at the entrance of Westminster Hospital. Totally the wrong place. Now really in a state of panic, I raced off again, trying to find the elusive Wigmore Street. I made a silent vow to myself at that moment to make sure when we had our next baby, it would be born at Westminster Hospital. That way I'd be sure to get it right the first time. I stayed with Gabrielle a while after we found the nursing home, but the staff sent me off saying she'd be all right and would sleep the night. "If anything happens," I said, "don't worry," the nurse said. "We'll call you." and we've notified her doctor. He was delighted, of course, to be called away from his dinner party. He said he'd drop in later, the nurse added. Early the next morning, I went to see Gabrielle, but now there was no sign of the baby, not a contraction in sight. It was apparent that nature was in no mood to be rushed. A disapproving nurse watched me narrowly as I explained I was taking my wife home. "Well, you've got to sign a proper release form to show that you're taking her away," she said. "Yes, I know," I told her. "But I'm entitled to her. She's my wife." I drove Gabrielle home, enthusiastically explaining all the while that what we'd saved on the nursing home could be used later on for the baby's education. Gabrielle didn't look convinced, and the chilling prospect of a repeat of that ride to the nursing home did nothing at all to improve her humour. Late that evening, her contractions began again, and soon it was clear that all systems were absolutely go. The drive this time was decidedly less manic. I did my best to help the baby on its way by driving over the bumpy Vauxhall Bridge Road. Finally, on Friday afternoon, word came to the hall where I was rehearsing a television play that our daughter Emma had been born at 3:15 p.m. They let me out of rehearsals, and I rushed straight to the hospital before I went to the theatre for the evening performance of the anniversary. Gabrielle became pregnant again a year or so later, and this time we planned that I would actually be present at the birth. The gynecologist who attended Emma's birth declined to take our case this time, obviously deciding he'd had enough. The new doctor didn't know me very well and agreed in a rash moment to permit me in the delivery room at Westminster Hospital. He realized his mistake very early on, and for the next several months took on the added role of a theatrical agent in his quest to get me into a job and out of town before the birth. I did have a new job by then. I can't remember what it was, only that it prompted me to grow a beard. But much to the doctor's despair, it was in London. Besides, no matter what he'd arranged, there was no way I was going to miss the experience. I'm delighted to report there was much less time spent on the A22 for the birth of our second child, Lucy. Remembering my instinctive knowledge of the route to Westminster Hospital, I kept the vow I made to myself and booked a room for Gabrielle there. In the hospital that day, I made myself useful as I sat with Gabrielle and helped her time the contractions. Her labor was much shorter this time. Memory plays bizarre tricks. How odd to remember that we were watching the beginning of a new police series called Softly, Softly on television when the nurse came in. "It's time to go down, Mrs. Crawford," she said. I followed along, walking behind the rolling stretcher into the elevator and down to the delivery room. I held on to Gabrielle's ankle all the while, like a child holds its mother's hand, as much for my own support as to comfort her, not wanting to be intrusive, but knowing full well that I was. I was stopped at the delivery room door. "Would you please go and scrub up, Mr. Crawford?" the nurse said. "Well, I had a wash before I left," I said. "I'm really clean." "No, Mr. Crawford," she explained, handing me a surgical cover and mask. "We all scrub up here, whether we've had a wash or not." "Oh, certainly." "Yes, of course," I said. A hospital scrub-up room is a place at least as unsettling and alien to the outsider as any Martian spaceship might be to an Earthling. Eyes peer at you from all corners of the room. All conversation stopped when I entered. Only the hiss of running water broke the silence. Out of the corner of my eye, I saw the doctor standing next to me glance speculatively in my direction. He looked me up and down as I adjusted the mask over my bearded face, then sighed in resignation. I caught a glimpse of myself in the mirror. With red whiskers poking through the mask at odd places, my face looked like a wasp's backside. The doctors and nurses did much turning on and off of water taps with only the use of an elbow, an impressive feat to my mind. Of course, when I tried it, I squirted my dirty soap all over the doctor standing next to me, who then, rather pointedly, proceeded to scrub up all over again. The scrub up over, we entered the theatre. Gabrielle lay on the table, her legs resting in uncomfortable-looking stirrups. She was surrounded by masked nurses. I gave her a confident, everything's under control nod. Good grief, what am I in for? Please let me get through this without fainting. Would you like to stand by your wife's head, Mr. Crawford? The doctor asked. Yes, I said. But isn't it going to happen down there? Yes, Mr. Crawford, he sighed. But it's best if you keep out of the way. Why don't you comfort your wife? Just speak to her. Hello, darling, I said to her. How are you? I then ran out of conversation. I looked at the doctor. Is there anything in particular you'd like me to tell her? Just comfort her, he said. Hold her hand or something. Gabrielle began to emit sounds of high hysteria, caught between the pain of contractions and laughter at the fiery whiskers that lopsidedly pierced a face mask, which I now began to realize muffled my speech.
Hi, I said. Are you all right?
I sounded as though my mouth had been stuffed with cotton. Pardon? She asked. Pardon? I had to shout at her to make myself understood.
Everything's okay. Everything's fine.
By the time the birth process was reaching its climax, I was on top of the bed trying to see exactly what was going on down the busy end. When the baby finally appeared, I was shouting at the top of my voice, It's a boy! It's a boy! The doctor glared at me. It's a girl, Mr. Crawford! It's a girl! It's a girl, I said. Oh, what in hell is that? That, he said, is the umbilical cord. Oh, thank heaven for that, I said. I thought, could you leave the room now, Mr. Crawford? The doctor said quietly. He looked tired. I'd be happy to, I said, much relieved. Oh, I'd be happy to, because I think I'm going to... We know, he said. Please leave. Well done, fellows, I mumbled. It was great. Good stuff. I punched Gabrielle on the shoulder with a reassuring tap. Good girl. You were great. I found the gents only just in time. When I tried to get my head over the sink bowl to douse it with cold water, my legs almost collapsed from under me. I staggered back to the hospital room, still wearing the now completely soaked surgical mask. A sign hung on the door. Mrs. Crawford, engaged. I crossed the word off and wrote, married, over the top of it, and went in. Softly, Softly was still on television. I hadn't missed a thing.